Welcome to the marketing session of Apps Marketing 101 for developers for Google Play. Delighted to see everybody here. It's been a pretty amazing day, at least to say it's been a surprise, or been full of surprises, even for some of us on the marketing team. It's been really exciting. 20 billion app downloads, of course, on Google Play, 1.5 billion downloads every single month. And, of course, the source of a lot of those revenues, as you've seen from some of the previous sessions, in application billing, of course, being on a tear. So we're going to talk to you a little bit about marketing today, about a couple of minutes, spend a couple of minutes on how we market the store and your apps to consumers, which I think could be of interest to a number of you, and then talk about, you know, app marketing in itself. What is app marketing all about? How should we do it? What kind of frameworks can we share with you, and what kind of tools can we share with you? So let's think about marketing for a second, and probably some of you out there in the audience have heard of the famous four Ps. Who's heard of the four Ps? Four Ps? Okay, a couple people. Well, let's talk first about what the four Ps are not. Please, 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 please download my application. Please, please, please buy my app. Yes, you can do marketing that way. Of course, it's not the most effective, but we're going to talk about all the tricks in the books that have to do with marketing, including the real four Ps, which we'll get to in a minute. But one of the things I wanted to share with all of you is a little bit our friendly neighborhood checklist for what it is to do marketing when we're talking about apps. So if your eyes do kind of start glazing over at this point, it is 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's been a very exciting day, don't worry, the presentation is going to be available offline, and we'll have versions for you to download, especially of this particular slide. What we're going to talk about is basically our apps, our business models, how to promote applications, and how to distribute applications. And what we've done actually for all you developers in the house to make this even easier is we've kind of color-coded everything. So basically, if you're a new developer or you're a developer who doesn't potentially have a lot of experience developing app or marketing applications, then there's a lot of this stuff is going to be new to you, especially the stuff in blue, which is the basic stuff on marketing that you should be looking at. If you're already a little bit more advanced, an intermediate developer with some basic marketing experience, you're going to want to look at all the things that are highlighted in green. And, of course, for those of you who have been really successful, some of the larger developers who are making some money on Android, which is always great news to hear, then a lot of the stuff that's color-coded in red as advanced. But before we go into the actual nuts and bolts, let's play a little video which gives you a good idea of how we actually market apps to consumers. This is Gears and premieres exclusively at Google
Play. Suppose you buy an app on your computer to send to your smartphone. You might need a cable to transfer it from one to the other. And if you want it on your tablet, you need to transfer it again. Suppose you used Google Play. You can buy an app on your computer and send it to any of your Android devices instantly, with no cables. Because Google Play makes your apps available anywhere, so you can enjoy them everywhere. Google Play, your entertainment, all simply here.
So this is kind of a little bit, an example of how we're actually getting out there and really starting to market applications on your behalf and going out and talking to consumers. And I think it's also worth sharing a little bit what are the other kind of things that we're doing to market Google Play. In particular, one of the things that's worth sharing with all of you in the room and all of the people in our international audience who are live streaming this today is just how much effort is going into marketing this store. In the first 6 weeks of launch alone, we did over 5 billion impressions to consumers all over the world, not to mention a lot of the other advertising that you may have seen, for example, seeing Google Play available on the nav bar across all our Google properties, or a lot of the emails and CRM that we've been doing, or a lot of the work that we've been doing with partners. The advertising effort on behalf of the team at Google Play and the marketing team has been nothing less than spectacular over the past couple of months and is only going to grow and accelerate over time. More importantly, though, and this is really kind of like a big call out to all of you in the room and to all the developers who have supported us, as Hugo said at his keynote, is there's been a lot of love for the developer community. There's been a lot of support from all our content partners, whether that's game developers, app developers, books publishers, music labels, and movie studios. Really kind of the feedback that we've gotten from the community, from all our partners, has been tremendous and has really also helped accelerate the awareness of consumers of what Google Play is and as a destination to get all the things content for their devices. So this has been amazing, and we really thank you for that. But let's get to the nitty-gritty. Let's get to the stuff that we're really interested in and exciting about, and that is, how do we actually market apps? Well, one of the ways that we look at things at Google, and we encourage our partners to do the same, is really this very simple matrix that our CMO, Lorraine Tuhill, has come up with, which really guides the essence of philosophy of marketing at Google. And that is really understanding users, building magical experiences, which in this case is you guys building magical applications, and then really connecting the two. So let's take a really kind of bizarre but fun and specific example of how that works in reality when we talk about apps. Let's say that you're a carpenter, or you're doing DIY in your house, and you're fixing chairs and you're hanging frames up on your wall and you're maybe adjusting beams, you know, in your house, and you're doing all sorts of work in your house. Well, how cool would it be if when you're putting that frame up on the wall, the one that you kind of like have to ask your wife to sit 50 meters behind you to tell you if it's crooked or if it's straight, how cool would it be if you had a little application that could do that for you? Like Ben Zibel's Bubble App. So I could fire up my Bubble App, and I can place my phone right on top of that frame, and I can see if the frame is perfectly aligned or not. Saves me a lot of time, makes my life easier, and to some extent as well, it's kind of a magical experience. And the point is that applications are either enhancing our lives or making our lives more productive, or they're entertaining us. And they do it in such a way that really has a magical quality and component to it. And our role as marketers, and your role as marketers, is how do we connect those two? How do we connect the magic of the apps that we build with essentially an entertaining experience for a consumer or a productive experience for consumers? But really, before we actually get into the nuts and bolts of the four Ps themselves, let's talk about research for a minute. Because when you talk about users, it really starts with research. Before you even write that first line of code, you really have to understand who your consumers are, what they're doing, how they download apps, where they download apps, and how they consume and use those applications. And really, it's a lot simpler than you would think. People always think, oh, research, you know, they think about IDC or they think about Nielsen, they think about tens of thousands of dollars spent on research. And it's really not that complex or that expensive. The way we break it down, for example, is we look at quantitative versus qualitative research. At its very basic level, your quantitative research is basically when you go out and you do extensive questionnaires and you survey thousands of different consumers, or hundreds of different consumers, and you're asking the basic questions that you're trying to get answered. How often does this consumer download applications? What kind of handsets are they using? How much per month are they spending downloading applications? How long are they spending in an application session? You're really trying to understand kind of the macro broad picture of consumer demographics and habits and consumption to guide the development philosophy for your application. Then, of course, as you start building your application, you get near that famous milestone, that first milestone of having a beta or an alpha, then really it's about qualitative research. And qualitative research can take a lot of different forms, like focus groups, for example, or screen focus groups, or just sitting down with a bunch of people that you may or may not know that well around pizza and beers and trying to understand what they think of your app. And this is really the in-depth part of the market research, which is where you're really trying to understand, how is the consumer using my app? How quickly does my app load? What kind of features do they like? How easy is the UI to navigate? And what kind of features could enhance the application? Or better yet, what features should I remove because the consumers simply don't either get the features or they don't really use the features? The best news about research and its ability to guide our development philosophy, as I said earlier, is that it's neither that expensive or that time-consuming. You can start it right now, and you can do research online. You could go, for example, to google.com/insights, put together three simple questions, survey 1,500 consumers, and get answers in 3 to 4 days at less than $1,000 on the quantitative side. And your focus groups, again, this is something that you just need to know enough people that you can get together groups of people and spend an afternoon brainstorming and getting all that feedback. It's really not that hard, and there's a lot of tools available to do that. And now, introducing the real four Ps. So how do the real four Ps influence our marketing and our thinking around app marketing? Well, of course, when we talk about the real four Ps, we're talking about product, which is our app. We're talking about price, which is our business model. We're talking about distribution, which ends up being how many devices are we covering? what operating systems are we developing on? And what channels within those operating systems are we distributing on? And lastly, we're talking about promotions, which can be anything from the type of assets that we build, the thumbnails, the screenshots, the assets, the videos, our banners, search ads, all the kind of tools that we would use to promote our applications. So talking about product, and I love this analogy, and it's actually even better to use this analogy at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because by this point, I know most of you people have eaten, so you're not starving, and you won't just run out of the room when you see all this stuff that's on the slide. But truth be told, the way I look at it is it's about snacking versus feasting, right? So around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, like right now, you might have a little hunger. You might want a little something to snack on. So you grab, you know, a Snickers bar, or you'll grab, you know, a bag of chips, and you'll open that bag of chips, and you'll push your hand into the bag, and you'll take out one or two chips. But you're not going to put your hand and take all the chips out of the bag and stuff them in your face. Well, some people might, but you probably won't, right? And it's really something that you do just to kill the hunger at that particular point in time. Versus, of course, feasting, which is what's going to happen around 11 o'clock or midnight tonight after you've been hearing Paul Oakenfold and dancing all night and you're starving and you need about 5 courses. Totally different experience. Right? Why am I using this example? Mobile app usage and mobile app consumption is all about snacking. It's not about feasting. If you look at the research that we see and the research that's publicly available will tell you that on average, consumers are spending probably around an hour and a half per day using apps. So what does that tell us? Well, that tells us that if they're spending about an hour and a half per day using apps, and they've got maybe 30 apps on their phone, of which they use 10 frequently, well, they're probably going to use your app no more than 9 or 10 minutes a day. Sounds obvious. But what's the implication for product development? There's a couple of implications. The first implication is that if I, as a consumer, am using my favorite app, and I'm using it for 5 minutes a day, if I get a notification from you that says that I need to update my application, activate my Wi-Fi network, and download 2 gigabytes of files, well, maybe with smart apps now that's going to be easier, but that still kind of goes against the philosophy of snacking, right? Why am I going to spend 5 minutes downloading a file when I'm using the app maybe 9 minutes on every single day? It has implications in terms of the load speed, right? If I'm getting on a bus and I've got 2 stops and I want to check my sports scores or I want to see what the weather's like in London, well, we know what the weather's like in London, but if I want to see what the weather's like in London, you know, I'm not going to want the application to take 20 to 30 seconds to load. I want to get into it really quickly. I want to dip my hand into the experience, dip it out, get my information, thank you very much, and I'm done. And it has lots of other implications as well. Right, it has implications in terms of how easy is the application to use. Let's say that I am on that bus in London and I've got about 15 minutes commute. Well, am I going to spend 5 minutes of those 15 minutes actually reading through all, like, you know, the options that are available in the app and trying to read and understand how the app works? Probably not. I really want to get into the experience quickly, which means I need an intuitive UI. I need very easy-to-use features. I need to be able to dip in and dip out very quickly. So understanding your users and understanding that people snack has direct implications for how you develop content. So let's talk for a minute about great applications. And there are thousands of great applications. And, of course, we can't possibly cite them all, but this is an old-school example that I like to use. eBuddy is a Dutch developer that's been around since 2005, 2006. Started originally developing J2ME apps. And kind of I remember that fondly because I started my career in games, trying to sell J2ME games to carriers 5 years ago. And hence the first slide about please, please, please. You probably get the rest of the picture. Needless to say, obviously, you know, these guys have been around a very long time. And they do a lot of things really, really well. So what we did was we put together a handy little checklist for these guys for what do we think these guys do well. A couple of things. First of all, the product really solves a clear and present need. As I mentioned earlier at the beginning of my speech, you're either entertaining or you are addressing a specific issue or making the person's life easier. eBuddy does that basically by aggregating 5 or 6 different IMs into one easy-to-use client where you can be logged into all your instant messengers and be chatting with your friends anywhere in the world, no matter what instant messenger they're using. They solve a need. They have excellent device coverage. One of the things that amazes me about developers is that sometimes we'll see these great apps, and they'll be like 500 megabytes in size, and they have a blacklist of 1,200 devices. Well, you know, one of the ways that you basically get noticed in the apps market is through virality. And virality means reach, and reach means device coverage. And these guys have a very simple app that works very quickly. It's very easy to use. It loads very quickly. The UI is super intuitive, and they're available across lots of different devices. As a matter of fact, they're available on nearly every device from Android 1.5 and up. Now, I'm not telling you guys need to go back and develop on 1.5, but what I'm saying is you need to be available on as many devices as are relevant to maximize your virality. Of course, the other thing that's important with this application, which goes without saying and also helps virality, is parity of features across operating systems. If I have a great application that I get on Android, and it's got these cool features, and I tell my friend about it, and he's got an iPhone, he goes out and downloads it, and it doesn't have the same features, that's kind of a crummy experience for him, right? Likewise, if the opposite happens, that somebody gets a great application on iOS, and then tells their friend downloads the Android version, and it's a port, that's not a really cool thing to do either. And as a matter of fact, when you talk about placement and getting featured in the Google Play Store, that is a sure way not to get featured in the Play Store, right? We want to make sure that Android consumers have the best possible experience, and if possible, a better experience than on other platforms. And lastly, continuously upgrading the application, making sure that you're constantly fixing bugs, constantly removing features that are out of date, constantly improving on new features, and making sure that the quality of your application isn't just good when you launch, but it's continuously and consistently good across all your revisions. And if you look at eBuddy, they have a 4.3 rating across 155,000 reviews. And they have done 10 to 50 million downloads on Google Play, which is actually a lot more than some of the better-known apps that we know here in the Valley. So a lot of different things to cover on our checklist. So you've heard a lot from product about me, but let's actually turn it over to a video of some of our friendly developers, one of our top developers, to talk about their experience on product.
My name is Perry Tam. I'm CEO and co-founder of Stormate.
And I'm Vatsal Bhardwaj, product manager for growth initiatives here at Stormate.
At Stormate, we make social games for mobile. In the past 3 years, we have created 30 titles, and they have been downloaded more than 300 million times on more than 100 million devices.
When we look at marketing and marketing strategy at Stormate, it actually starts with the product concept. So when we are thinking about what game we are going to build next, that's when marketing starts. So we do a lot of rigorous market research, surveying of our users to understand what kind of games, what kind of features, game mechanics will deliver them most fun. So to deliver high quality product for our users, there are really three things which go with it. The first is a very strong focus on the target consumers. The second piece is a solid product and product management process. And then the third piece is our analytics and data capabilities. We pay a lot of attention to, you know, who are our target users, where are they located, what kind of Android devices they are using.
There was a time that we did like 40% off pricing to test out what would that drive the effect of, you know, our users' behavior. We also did maybe drop the price to 99 cents for a limited time period. And from those tests, we collect a lot of data as to whether they convert more free users to paying users or actually could be detrimental to us down the road.
We pay a lot of attention to packaging of our games. So it includes things like the screenshots, the app icon, the description, and we want to make sure that it's well optimized so that users who love that game can easily discover it. We have a very strong data and analytics team, and throughout the process, we make sure we do rigorous analysis and measurement to again create the game which's going to be most fun for our users.
Great. So there you have a little bit from StoreMate, but you know, as I hope you noticed, research, rigorous development process, really iterating and really understanding the data, right? Critical to getting the product right. But of course, although we like to make great apps and games, you know, if we can't pay the water bill at the end of the month, it all becomes a little bit hairy, right? So no conversation would be complete, you know, without talking about business models. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because, of course, many of you just sat through a session on monetization from Kenneth Liu and his colleagues, and, you know, I think they did an excellent job of describing the various models out there. What I will try and do is add a little bit my two cents and experience on based on, you know, how to look at each one of these individual models and some of the unique variables that affect each. So, you know, you've heard about freemium, you've heard about the march of freemium and how well that's doing. You know, as Chris mentioned, it's over 50% of our revenue now, which is really exciting, and we've seen a huge takeoff in freemium over the last 12 months. That's not to say that it is the right model for you. That's not to say that it's going to make you super competitive against other apps that are in your system. As I think we've seen, freemium really works better in some categories versus others, and we really have to understand what the right price points are when it comes to freemium. What's going to be the way to engage with consumers? How often do we provide notifications to consumers? What kind of notifications do we provide, and at what price points? So it's really about testing, re-understanding, changing the pricing, looking at price elasticity, and really measuring and analyzing what works. More importantly, I think one of the questions I wanted to address directly is talking about paid applications, because many of your applications out there will still be paid apps, and as mentioned earlier, freemium might not work for you. So let's spend a minute talking about paid applications. And I really wanted to talk about two things when it has to do with paid apps. Because even though we're in the world of smartphones and Java is long gone from now, well, there's still a lot of things that don't change. There's still a lot of constants that remain the same. And one of those is the challenge around pricing. So the myth around the 99-cent price point, or the 99-cent dilemma, as I call it. Well, here's the dilemma. The dilemma is that if you look at a curve and you look at the number of applications available on the Android platform, or on iOS for that matter, you'll see that the left side of the curve, where the majority of the apps lie, are where most of those apps are at 99 cents. And here's the problem with that. Well, the problem is that if you price your app at 99 cents from the get-go, how do you discount? If you want to put your app on sale, where do you go from 99 cents? You can't. It's a lot harder. And one of the rules of marketing, and you'll hear several of those today, is very simple, and it's this. It's always a lot easier to take your price down than to raise your price. In any product, in any category, in any supermarket, in any industry, it's always the same case. So our recommendation there is if you are going to have paid apps, always start at a slightly higher price point because it gives you flexibility to discount and make offers on your application. The other reason why we believe pricing at 99 cents is a risk is because ultimately most of us, when we go to make a purchase, let's say we're buying a pair of sneakers, or buying a pair of jeans, or we're buying, I don't know, a plane ticket. Having a lower price tells us a certain thing about the product that we're buying. And in many cases, low price equals cheap. So the question to you then is that the kind of message that you want to pass to your consumer? The person that's seeing your app for the first time, and maybe sees your app side by side with five other competitors, and you're the cheapest app. That sometimes works for consumers who are really price sensitive, but for other consumers, they'll look at that and say, meh, this app basically does the same. So it's probably not as good. And that does happen. More likely, what we like to do is we like to encourage you guys to really think about the price life cycle of your application. So what we've done is build kind of a theoretical model on how potentially that looks like. So in this particular case, an app developer launches an app or a game at $2.99, and they get a certain number of installs. The first month, it's 50,000. The second month, it's another 40,000. The third month, it starts to drop. And at that point, because they priced it at $2.99, well, they're able to drop the price. Say they drop the price at $1.99. And they get a whole bunch of new users who go, oh, yes, great, an offer. I'm going to get this app now. And they share it with their friends, and they say, you know, I was a cheap bastard before. I didn't want to buy it at $3, but now it's at $2, I'm in. So they buy the app. And the friends start piling in, and you get a little bit of virality as people pile into the app because they're getting a great deal. So there, what do? You raise the price. Once you start getting that volume build and that momentum, you raise the price back up. And a lot of consumers that may have heard about how great your app was, they don't necessarily realize that the price is no longer discounted, so they still buy it. And you can basically get the difference of what you were charging before versus after. And you can do that in cycles over time until you get to the end of the life cycle, where maybe 12 months out or 8 months out or whatever your product plan is, you decide you're going to phase out that app and launch a completely new one. In which case, what do? Well, since you priced at $2.99, you're going to drop the price to 99 cents. And that's a great bargain. And you can do that because you're at the end of your price life cycle and you're going to introduce another app anyway. So there what I'm saying is, again, theoretical model, but encouraging you guys to think of, what is the price life cycle of my app? How do I manage it over a time? And how do I give myself enough flexibility with my price point that I can move and pivot and change my price if I have to? Let's talk about ads. So this chart was taken from a Kleiner Perkins presentation by Mary Meeker. Some of you guys may read Mary Meeker on occasion when she publishes material on the internet specifically and about mobile internet. And the thing about ads is this. There's some good news and there's some opportunistic news, right? The reality about ads is that ads today, in terms of eCPMs, which is the effective cost per thousand, or what you're getting paid for your ads, is the eCPMs on mobile are significantly lower than on desktop. No surprise, right? Desktop's been around 10 years, has a different user base, they spend perhaps more time on desktop, so the value of the eCPM is higher. Mobile is still a lot lower. But the good news is, when you look at this graph, you'll see that the yellow bar, the bar on the left across all of these different types of media, that's the amount of time spent by consumers. So what do we see here? Well, we see that on average, consumers are spending about 10% of their time on mobile, which is huge. That's massively encouraging for every single one of us in this room and every single one of us around the world who's developing great content. The challenge is only 1% of the ad dollars are flowing into mobile today. But that means a massive opportunity. Why? Simple. Dollars always follow eyeballs. That's just the way advertising works. There's always a lag. Which means, essentially, if you have a great product and you really understand how to monetize through ads, it's a question of time before that gap closes and before the eCPMs either get close to or match what we see on desktops and enable you guys to really maximize the monetization of your apps through ads. I think the last point I want to make, well, two more points on monetization before moving on, is use hybrids. We saw that earlier. We saw Paymium, right? We saw a combination of different business models. And this is really exciting stuff, because what we're seeing is that more and more developers are starting to do this, and it's starting to really pay dividends, and it also reduces your risk as a developer. So if you have in-app payments, that's great. Why not throw in-app ads if it makes sense? And you could potentially monetize from both, or you can see which works better than the other. Right, having a hybrid and a combination of different business models gives you more flexibility and maximizes your ability to monetize your apps. Last point on monetization. We live in a global world. Apps are being downloaded every single second all over the world on all sorts of different devices. So what are the implications for you as app developers? Simple. Different business models will work differently in different countries. So if you've got a great game in the United States where you know that a lot of consumers, maybe 60% plus of consumers, are on contract and have higher-end smartphones, chances are those consumers are probably more willing to pay for your app. Therefore, a paid app or in-app payments might make more sense for you. But if you're trying to distribute and monetize your apps in India, where potentially 90 to 95% of consumers are on prepaid cards, and they're still in the process of rolling out 3G networks where data is expensive, then perhaps that business model doesn't work as well. And you need to think of, well, maybe I should monetize through ads. The reality there is, try and look at how you can monetize your app using different business models in different regions. Be creative. So once we've built this great product and we know how we're going to monetize and keep all the lights on at the end of the day, well, then we start thinking about, aha, how do I promote my app? Where should I spend my money? Where should I spend those hard-earned VC dollars that are going to enable me to get more users? Yay. Well, another rule of marketing, rule number two, numero uno, don't invest behind a weak product. It goes without saying. But you see people do this all the time, and not just in our business, but in tons of businesses. If you invest behind a weak product, you're basically creating a negative consumer perception of your product and of your brand if that's what you're trying to build. You should go back to the drawing board and rework your application until you're sure that you have the best possible experience. If you're not excited about your application or you're not convinced you would pay, do you think a consumer is because they're going to see an ad that you're using on AdMob or somewhere else? Probably not. And once you're really sure that you have the great product, then there's a number of really great frameworks that we can suggest with you to you that are really going to help you put together your marketing plan. The first of these is STP, knowing your users. It's all about segmenting, targeting, and then positioning your app properly. The second one is, once I position my app properly and I know who I'm going after, what's the message I'm giving the consumer? What is my one-liner? What are my points of difference? Why should a consumer care? Third, once I have all my messaging down and I've properly positioned my app and I know where I'm going, it's, well, how do I build a structured marketing plan? What needs to go into my marketing plan? What kind of activity should I do? And lastly, what does my media strategy look like? And the good news for all you guys is I'm going to go through each one of these in a little bit of detail and explain it more clearly. Let's look at our audience. So let's say, for example, I'm a game developer, and I've seen this great case study from Kenneth Liu at Google I.O., and I've decided, you know what? That's it, dude. I'm going for in-app payments. I'm going to do in-app payments with, like, funky furry animals at different price points, and I'm just going to get a ton of downloads so I can get consumers to basically pay me a lot of money. Well, if you're going to do in-app payments on games, well, then probably what you need to do is really segment your target audience properly and look at how you target those people. Excuse me. So if I'm using in-app payments for a game, there's two axes probably that I'm going to look at. I'm going to look at available time, because I need people to have available time to play my games. And then I'm probably going to look at disposable income. Because if a person is 13 years old and has a ton of available time but has no income, I'm probably not going to make much money from them. So I segment my audience this way, and I come up with all these different segments that I have. Upscale adults, techies, middle-income families, soccer moms, whatever it happens to be. And when I look at my matrix, I think, okay, well, the right target audience, you know, is probably these guys. Young adults, 24 to 35 years old, no kids, right? So they have disposable time, and they have income. That's my target audience. Then it's a question of, okay, how do I position my app? What's my one-liner to those people? What am I going to tell those people to get them to actually click and install my application? Which takes us to the next step. How do I develop convincing messaging? What's the one line that I'm going to tell people about my sports application that is going to get them so excited that they're going to want to download it? Is it that I have real-time instantaneous scores? Is it the fact that I'm the only application that has like social engagement and built-in hangouts into it? Is it the fact that I have this application that runs on all sorts of different platforms and backs up all my data onto the web? What's your one-liner? What's your positioning statement? And, of course, after that, it's like, what are the two or three key points of difference that are going to go into my product description? So that when people land on my page, because they've searched or they've clicked an ad, they read these three or four great things about my application. Not the bug fixes, but the stuff that really matters, where they think, this app is really cool because it has Android Beam, and I can do all this crazy stuff like play multiplayer games without even activating Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. That's wicked cool. I'm going to get that instead of that other application. And lastly, what's my call to action? When you start doing great creative, we see this all the time. We see app developers go out and they do, you know, web campaigns and online stuff and banners, and they advertise their app, and there's a little logo with a little dragon, and it doesn't tell me anything about what I should do next. Okay, so you've got me all excited about your little furry animals, and I can get all these collectible items. What do I do? Where do I go? Where can I find this app? Clear calls to action. On the right-hand side, actually, I thought it would be fun to share this. Kushagra, who's working with us right here on the Google Play team, and actually is the one who really was responsible for a lot of this material as well as the interviews, so I owe him a huge debt of gratitude on that. Kushagra put together an amazing promotion at the end of last year around apps. Some of you guys may have seen it. In December, we hit 10 billion downloads. We did a promotion called 10-10-10. Wow, I really need a beer. Ah, just the water just doesn't do it, but anyway. So we put together this promotion called 10-10-10. And 10-10-10 was to celebrate 10 billion downloads. And that now seems like a long time ago, right? 20 billion now. It's great stuff. We put together this promotion called 10-10-10, and we had three key things we wanted to communicate to consumers. 10 days, 10-cent apps, 10 apps a day. Really simple. And yet, even though it was so simple, as you can see going from top to bottom, we went through several different versions of creative material to get to the right creative. And you're not even seeing all of it because it wouldn't fit on this slide. We went through version after version after version after version after version of getting the creative right. And the point here is, whether it's your thumbnails or your videos or your text descriptions, you iterate, 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 iterate until you get it right. And you test and test and test and test until you get it right. Just like you do with your product. Creative is an iterative process, but it can be so effective if you do it right. That brings us to the marketing plan. How do we build a plan? Well, the way we look at marketing plans is quite simple. Awareness, trial, purchase, and repeat. And it has to be generally in that order. Why? Because if I basically start jumping into purchase, it's kind of like I met this pretty girl at the Paul Oakenfold party tonight, and I say tomorrow morning, hey, let's get married. No, you're weird. I'm not going to call you again. Right? It's basically you have to go through the steps of the process so that you can convince the consumer to get to that point where they're going to consider a purchase. So you start with awareness, talking to them about what your product does, where they should get it, why it's unique, how it's different. And there's a couple of tools that you can do here. This is not exhaustive, of course. Good PR. One of the most underused things I see in this industry. Talk to the press. Become their friends. Make sure that you send them their APKs. Get them to your studio to see what you're working on. It can be one of the most effective marketing tools you can do, and one of the cheapest is to get these people to write about your apps. And I'll give you another tip. Getting people to write about your apps has a direct influence on your search rankings in the Play Store. It's called web anchoring. And it means that the more people kind of like click on a link externally outside the Play Store and come to your page because they've read about you, the better you'll index in the search rankings. Social, right? We talked about virality. Have a blog. Invite people to comment on it. Post your APKs on it. Create discussion. Get people to talk about it. And then, of course, other basic tools, search ads, mobile ads. If you get to the point where you have the available cash, well, TV or above-the-line media. Then we talk about trial. What can we do for trial? Well, we talked about some of the business models earlier today. We can have a free trial version, a version where I can use the app for 30 days. And then it's great because I don't have to pay for it, and I can really figure out if I like it. And why is trial so important? Very simple, guys. It's very important because essentially many consumers out there have never experienced content before. Many consumers out there are getting a smartphone for the first time. And they'll think this content stuff's marvelous. Now, are they going to go out and shell $4 or $5 or €4 or €5 if they've never tried content before? Probably not in some cases. So by providing a free version of your application, you generate that comfort level. When I was in the soft drinks business, I worked at Pepsi for many years. When we launch a new drink in the market, we would go out, we would give hundreds of thousands of cans to people. We'd have these pretty girls in miniskirts, and they'd be walking down in the middle of traffic, and they'd knock on your door, and they'd be like, how about a can of Pepsi Max? Why do we do that? Trial. We want to make sure that the consumers love the product. Hopefully they like the girls too, but they love the product so that when they go to the supermarket, they've had it, and they've tried it, and they think, yeah, this is pretty good stuff. I think I'll buy a six-pack. Same thing goes for apps and games. We move on to purchase. Purchase, of course, there are other things that we can do. We can do direct response campaigns where we basically are pushing people to download our app. They've heard about it. They've read about it on TechCrunch. They've read the blogs. They've talked to their friends about it. We can do notifications where we're saying, okay, hey, guess what? You know, you've now been playing my game for 30 days. It's time to pay up. And they may or may not do that. But, of course, at least they've had the opportunity to try it because you've gone through step two. And lastly, repeat. Third rule of marketing, always easier to get money from an existing consumer than a new consumer. Makes sense, but a lot of people don't follow that rule. How do we keep the consumer interested? Well, we heard about it in the monetization panel, right? You give them more content. You upgrade your app frequently. You introduce new features. You give them new reasons to pay for this stuff. You provide updates. You have CRM campaigns, because you've actually been talking to your consumers for the past 3 years, and you have an email database of 150,000 loyal fans who have downloaded your app. That's all about repeat. But we do have a pretty good idea already of what kind of stuff works. So when I was talking about research earlier in the session, we did this over the last couple of weeks. We put out a couple of questions on google.com/insights, paid about $1,000 or whatever, and we basically asked people, okay, what influences your decision to install an app? U.S. only consumers, granted. We got about 1,500 responses, which is statistically significant. And here's what they told us. I'm influenced by user reviews, top apps lists, user ratings, and screenshots. Those are the top four. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean that they're not influenced by the rest, but they're influenced by a lot of stuff that you guys control. You control the user ratings because you control how good your product is and how frequently you update it and how many cool features you build in and how many crap features you take out. You control the text description because you read the great marketing slides that talk about how important creative is, and you built killer text, great assets, and super powerful videos that have gone totally viral on YouTube. So you control a lot of that stuff. And search, you don't control that directly, but you do control it indirectly. Why? Tip number two. The other thing that affects your search rankings in the Google Play Store is your number of installs. The more installs you have, the higher you are in the search rankings. However, caveat, the more uninstalls you have, the lower your search rankings, which is why you have to be careful when you use marketing, because if your product is not good enough, and you get a lot of installs, and then you get more uninstalls than installs because later people figure out that your app was not good, it's going to penalize your search rankings. And, of course, the last one on the list is kind of paid advertising or search, right? Paid search, AdMob ads. That stuff can be very effective at scale, but it isn't necessarily the primary thing that drives interest from consumers. Wow, lots of stuff. It's time to advertise. It's time to get out there and spend my hard-earned dollars advertising to consumers. What do I do? Well, we typically break this down into two different components, if you will. One component is, of course, brand awareness or brand advertising. Many consumers are very familiar with this. Typically, bigger brands do this. But also, developers who aspire to really build a long-lasting presence on mobile are starting to do this. And the thing that we're starting to see after 3 or 4 years now in the smartphone app space is you're starting to see the emergence of the world's first mobile brands, which is really cool, right? These are apps that have basically built their reputation and built their brand on mobile. Angry Birds, massive brand, started on mobile. Lookout Mobile Security, security app, started on mobile. Uber, some of you guys, a little bit more niche, started on mobile. We're seeing more and more mobile brands or brands that are being built for the first time through mobile. And when we talk about brand advertising, what essentially is that? Well, that's kind of stuff like if I come up with a cool video for my app and I promote that through YouTube, I might not necessarily get a ton of people to buy it, but I create a lot of awareness. Why? Because a picture is worth 1,000 words and a video is worth 1,000 pictures. That's brand awareness. That's brand advertising. TV, outdoor, YouTube, videos, that's brand awareness. How do you measure that stuff? You might ask, well, why on earth would I do this, man? I need to be able to measure this stuff. I mean, if I do an AdMob campaign, I can measure the clicks. Well, that's true, but you can also measure brand. It's a different way of doing it. Essentially, what you need to do is you run what's called a brand tracker, which can be a very simple exercise of asking 3 to 4 questions to your base of consumers every single month. And you ask them questions like, for example, among the following kinds of sports apps, which have you heard of? And you list all the apps, yours and your competitors. That's aided brand awareness. You can ask another question, which is, which sports apps have you heard of in general? That's unaided brand awareness. You can ask questions, for example, of, in the next 4 weeks, do you intend to purchase a sports app? That's purchase intent. So there are a lot of ways to measure brand awareness. Most of your time, however, is probably going to be focused on the second bullet, which is all about direct response. And in that case, what you're looking at is stuff like search, mobile ads, incentivized. So, tip number four. Search, at least for us, when we're promoting the Google Play Store, has been one of the most effective ways to actually advertise. Why? First of all, because the click-through rate, which our colleagues previously mentioned, is higher on search generally than any other medium. Why is that? Because search is an active advertising form. Search basically provides a request and provides information to a consumer who is already looking for something specific. Therefore, the odds are that that person is more interested in that result because it's specific to what they're looking for. If I do a search on sports apps and I see your app and I'm interested in sports, the probability is higher that I'm going to download that. And that means it's going to be more cost effective for you and a higher probability that that person's actually going to install your application. Typically, what would you expect from a good mobile search campaign? Well, you know, for us, we see that a good search result could be a good click-through rate on mobile search could be anywhere from 3, 4, 5% click-through rate, or at least 2%, somewhere around there. Ads, of course, you can use and are a very great way to scale your marketing efforts, but are typically going to be a little bit less effective. Why? Because ads essentially are a passive means of advertising. The consumer's playing a game when they're on a website somewhere and they see an ad, and basically it's a passive experience. I'm either interested in it or I'm not, but I'm not specifically making a proactive search for it, so I'm probably not looking for your application. Typically, a good response rate for a mobile ad campaign can be 0.5, 0.6, 0.7, 0.8% CTR. So again, vastly different from what you would get on search. Perhaps more targeted in certain cases, and perhaps you can get more scale, but again, different results. So here we're going to actually run another video where we interviewed another one of our top developers. In this case, it was PocketGems, who's actually tell us a little bit about their experience using marketing and what worked for them.
Hi, I'm Arjun Dayal, Android product lead at PocketGems.
Hi, I'm Michael Dawson. I lead business development at PocketGems.
PocketGems is a mobile gaming-focused company that was founded in 2009 and is backed by Sequoia Capital. Our titles have been downloaded over 60 million times, and on Android specifically, we've had 5 titles released in the last 9 months. Marketing at PocketGems allows us to inform our community about our new unique experiences. What we found is that by focusing on creating unique experiences applied to the broadest audience, what we're able to do is get the most engagement out of our user base.
For us, the goal is to get our games in front of as many people as possible. Google Play has been the most important for that, with by far the largest audience.
For marketing messages, a lot of the data is really centered around engagement. And for us, that's we're able to gauge the effectiveness of messages and how connected our community and population is based on the amount of time that they spent in the app and the number of times they've looked at different aspects.
We take a multi-channel approach. The most important channel is cross-promotion for us, but we layer onto that PR, paid advertising channels, as well as work to start word-of-mouth campaigns. We love talking to game writers and tech writers, as well as Android-specific bloggers. We have a lot of fun with the creative. We take our iconic characters, we put them in simple backgrounds, and then create a bunch of versions of those. Then we A/B test that creative. So as an example, with Tap Dragon Park, we took our little baby dragon Mixin, and we tried them in different colors and found people love blue the best. So we made blue the icon and a lot of our ad creative.
So for Tap Zoo and Tap Dragon Park, over the last couple months, we've had a number of different special promotions and specialized quests that have allowed our users to get creative.
We look to get the word out about our games right before they launch. So this can either be pure word of mouth of friends telling friends, or it can be in the games telling people about new games we've launched.
When we're about to launch an app, we create a number of different assets, including app icons, feature graphics, promotional graphics, viral videos, and descriptive screenshots that allow users who have not downloaded the game yet to understand what it's really like to play the actual game.
Cool. So that's it on advertising. The last thing really I wanted to talk about, the last P of the four Ps, is of course distribution. So you guys may remember that I said at the beginning of the presentation that I was a Pepsi guy, that I have blue blood that flows throughout my veins. And I was one of these freaks that would not drink a vodka Coke because it had Coke in it. So I'd just drink the vodka. So it does pain me to say this, but why is Coke still it? Why does Coke still beat Pepsi? Distribution. It's not that necessarily that they have a stronger brand. It's certainly not that they have better advertising. Coke today is available in more countries of the world freely and accessibly than bottled drinkable water. That sounds like a joke. It is very true. The thing that built Coke is distribution muscle. And some of these pictures prove it. You can find Coke nearly anywhere. I have found Coke in the most outrageous places imaginable. And of course it pissed me off because I wanted a Pepsi. The same kind of thinking needs to influence your decision when you think about distribution. Your distribution does not end when you go live on the Play Store. Maybe it does on iOS, but not on the Play Store. Our goal is virality. And virality means reach. So how do we tackle distribution as app developers? Well, the first step, of course, is device coverage. We look at all those devices. We look at the market. We anticipate the new devices coming out in the market. And we think to ourselves, what devices do I need to be on? What are the legacy devices that still have a lot of traction? What are the new devices that are going to be hot that I need my game to be on? The more devices that we're on, the more people are going to talk about our great products. And it's going to go viral. And I'm not going to have to worry if the consumer has the phone or not because I've developed for it. The second step is channel coverage. Now, of course, we're thrilled that you guys use Google Play. And we think that Google Play is going to be your main distribution channel for a long time to come. But that doesn't mean it's the only distribution channel. And the fifth tip of the day is distribute your application on as many distribution channels as makes commercial sense for you, wherever that might be. If you go, for example, to whipconnector.org, which is a site run by the Wireless Industry Partnership, which is, you know, a nonprofit geared towards helping developers, there's a whole section on that site that talks about app stores and app distribution channels across all the OSs, not just Android. So in that respect, do yourselves a favor and distribute on as many channels as makes sense for you, whether that's carrier portals or carrier preloads or third-party app stores. If it makes sense and you can reach more people and you can get more viral, go for it. The third step, of course, is in line with our thinking about virality, and that's OS coverage. If a consumer has a great experience on an Android app, but they have a lot of friends who, God forbid, you know, have iPhones, well, why should those people not be able to get your app as well? It all helps you go viral, right? So have your app available, again, on as many OSs as is commercially viable, as makes business sense for you, because it's going to drive your virality. When you look back at the case of eBuddy, these guys are available on every single platform known to man, including, for example, mobile web. And lastly, of course, analyze, optimize, prioritize constantly. Look at your distribution channels. Look at your downloads by installed devices. Look at your downloads by channel, and then reprioritize every quarter. Look at the data, analyze, rinse and repeat, start over. Lastly, of course, you're always going to need a little bit of luck. Cross your toes, cross your fingers, and hope it all works. So we've been through a lot of stuff today. People are probably tired. People are probably thirsty. We have a really cool fireside chat coming up, which I hope you guys will stay for. The other thing I wanted to point out is there's going to be a great session on day 3, 11:30 a.m., about measurement. This is going to go into a lot of detail, helping you guys analyze how your performance of your campaigns are doing. Today we've covered a lot of stuff. We've talked about our product. We've talked about our business models. We've talked about our promotions and how we advertise and promote our apps, kind of assets we build. We've talked about distribution, right? All the different ways that we can go viral. And, of course, we have our great checklist. So we really have a lot of stuff for you guys to sink your teeth into. Thank you very much. Have a great time at I.O.